to session. We're going to take agenda number one agenda item out of order. That's agenda item number 9. And it was moved and representations were made to the public and participants because we're trying to adjust for Board Member Massey's possible not arriving on time today, which he did. And so since we told people that it'd be held early, we felt we needed to be consistent with that. Before we begin, I have one announcement, and that is our attorneys are looking it up to confirm, but it came up last week in the attorneys' meeting that you should be able to say which board members voted for which item, and the only way to do that is roll call votes. So rather than what we will do is for this meeting, we're going to call roll call votes. Patty's on board with that. And then that will give our legal counsel more time to research it, and at the same time we're operating in a copacetic manner. So I did want to say the first roll call vote will be starting now on any board decisions. So with that, I will call on Mona to proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'm Mona Doherty, a senior engineer with your staff and the supervisor of the stormwater program in the North Coast region. We're here today to discuss a couple of different aspects of the stormwater program and give you an update. We have Sarah Gatsky and Greg Gearhart here from the State Board. They're going to talk about the stormwater strategic initiative that they've been working on developing. This is an initiative to improve the use of stormwater and its value as a resource, improve source controls, and to improve the effectiveness of the stormwater program. And then next, we'll hear from Colleen Hunt, environmental scientist in the Municipal Stormwater Program, and Andy Rogers, the executive director of the Russian River Watershed Association. And they're going to discuss their efforts and challenges, the process, and the benefits of enrolling or aligning all of the Phase 2 and Phase 1 municipalities in the Russian River Watershed into one municipal stormwater permit. And last, Colleen's going to give us an update on her efforts to renew our municipal stormwater permit, our Phase 1 permit for Santa Rosa and Sonoma County and the Sonoma County Water Agency, and how that effort is going. So with that, I'll turn over the presentation to Sarah Gatsky, who is working on the Stormwater Strategic Initiative, and also to Greg Gearhart, who has been instrumental in developing the stormwater program at the State Board for many years.
Good morning. My name is Sarah Gatsky. I work at the State Water Board in the Stormwater Program, and Greg and I would both like to thank the board members for inviting us here to give you an update on the strategic initiative. So I'm going to start off today with a quick summary of the recent history of stormwater management and some factors driving the water boards to reconsider how we regulate and manage stormwater. And then I'm going to move into the update on the Stormwater Strategic Initiative and let you know where we are in that process. So, in urban and suburban areas, stormwater is one of the primary stressors on surface water. And from the year 2000 to the year 2050, the amount of urbanized area in the United States is expected to increase by the size of the state of Montana. That's a huge increase, and we expect much of that growth to happen in sort of these fringe areas like the Sierra foothills in this photo, and that has implications because as we develop in these fringed areas, they're often higher sloped areas because we've developed our flatlands, and that has implications on stormwater runoff and management, and especially factors on water supply and water quality. So this is an example of sort of our traditional idea of stormwater management. Oftentimes, we've focused on conveying stormwater off-site as quickly and as efficiently as possible in order to protect human health and property. And so we did this by disconnecting the runoff from the landscape, using impervious surfaces and networks of storm drains to quickly convey the water to nearby water bodies. And oftentimes, we didn't consider hydrologic disturbances or contaminant inputs to those receiving water bodies. And so here's a quick graph, a hydrograph of the effects of urbanization on stormwater runoff. And so you can see there's the post-development red line and the pre-development line. And when you urbanize an area, the effect on stormwater is to increase peak flows, increase the total volume of the stormwater flow, and also increase the frequency of those events. And so here's a picture to show an example of, you know, our traditional storm management processes and sort of the effects of them. So we see we have some fairly severe erosion happening because of the increased peak flows and flow durations and the frequency of the flows. And so this daycare center or school in this photo should maybe start thinking about finding a new outside play area for the students because they're having some erosion issues here. So I gave you a brief summary of the problems we have when we only consider stormwater management from a quantity or a flood control aspect. And so this is a graph showing the shifting paradigms of stormwater management. The x-axis is time. We start in the 1960s where we're really only considering how to manage stormwater for quantity. And then we move to more present-day practices, and we have, you know, more objectives. We manage for water quality, ecosystem health, and stormwater use, to name a few of the new paradigm objectives. And so in order for the water boards to start coming into line with those new objectives, members of the stormwater program have put together a team, and we are working on a stormwater strategic initiative. And the stated goal of the initiative is to better integrate watershed management, multi-benefit, and true source control interests into the core regulatory program while improving program efficiency and effectiveness. So the ultimate outcome of the Stormwater Strategic Initiative will be a state water board approved work plan, and that will outline actions that the water boards can take to meet the goals that I just talked about of the strategic initiative. And so this is going to be done in two phases. The first phase will be a proposal for the work plan. We'll take that and present it to our board and ask them to give us some further direction. And then we'll move on to the second phase where we finalize the work plan and make an implementation strategy for these actions that we hope the stormwater program can take. We're currently in the first phase of the work. So about a year ago, a team of six state and regional water board employees or staff members went out and had over 20 stakeholder meetings to gather input on from other water board staff, the regulated community, environmental groups, and other interested parties to see what they thought issues were with the current stormwater program and how we could make changes to improve stormwater regulation and management. And so we're currently in the phase where we're analyzing that input we got during the stakeholder meetings and developing this work plan. And so the draft of the work plan should be available for public comment later this spring, and then we hope to take the finalized document to the board with a request for direction at the end of the summer. I'm going to give you a brief overview of the process that we're using to develop the work plan proposal. So first, we developed some guiding principles to serve as fundamental values that provide desirable and positive direction for the stormwater program. We're then using those guiding principles to evaluate and prioritize the issues that we heard in these stakeholder meetings. And then finally, we're going to develop a list of possible actions that the water board can participate in order to address the identified issues and help us align the stormwater program with our guiding principles. We're currently in the preliminary stages of identifying those actions, so I won't be able to give you specifics on those today, but just sort of outline the general types of actions we expect to take. So here are our four guiding principles. The first is that stormwater is a valued resource. The second is that stormwater is a principal factor in the quality and health of California waters. Third, that addressing pollutants at earlier pollutant life cycle stages is an effective and efficient means of protecting water quality. And finally, that improving stormwater program efficiency and effectiveness enhances productivity and supports environmental outcomes. So like I explained before, we're taking those guiding principles and we're using them to evaluate and prioritize the issues that the stakeholders identified during our stakeholder process. We have a list of about 40 issues that we've synthesized from those meetings. 40 issues is way too many to present to you today. I hope you appreciate that I'm not going to try to. We've come up with sort of seven categories that all of those issues fit into. So I'm going to go over those categories, and I'm going to show you them with the guiding principle they most closely address. So the issue categories that address stormwater as a valued resource are: stormwater policy and management actions should optimize the use of stormwater as a resource. And second, consistent widespread messaging is needed to broaden the understanding of the value of stormwater. The issue that addresses stormwater is a principal factor in the quality and health of California waters is that stormwater permits should provide accountability and support water quality outcomes. The category that addresses the third guiding principle is that non-regulatory approaches should be efficiently and effectively supported as a solution to some stormwater pollutants. And our issue categories that support our fourth guiding principle are that stormwater program funding barriers need to be addressed. Second, that stormwater programs need effective reporting and assessment methods. And finally, that stormwater policy and permits should be periodically updated to reflect the continually improving understanding and management of stormwater. So, like I said, we're in the preliminary stages of identifying actions that the Water Board can take to help address the issues that we've gathered through stakeholder input. And so I'm not gonna be able to tell you a list of those actions that we'll take, but just I wanted to explain generally what those actions will be. We're going to put together a list of issues that will address the issues, the high priority issues. And so they're going to leverage ongoing or planned efforts with other agencies or groups as much as we can possibly coordinate that. And the actions are going to result in concrete steps that the water boards can take in the next probably decade or so. They will likely result in a resolution, a new or modified policy, a permit modification, a basin plan amendment, or the development of a guidance document. And so we expect to have that draft list of actions along with the entire work plan proposal ready for public comment late spring. And we'll do some targeted outreach to make sure that the regional board stormwater program here gets to have some input and give us some comments as well. And then, like I said, we'll present the proposal to the state board this summer. And then that will help us, give us a direction to move for the final phase of the strategic initiative to develop the work plan. And so I'm gonna pass it over to Greg now to finish.
Good morning, my name is Greg Gerhardt. I wanna briefly just state that I am the deputy director at the State Water Board in charge of information management and analysis. 6 months ago, though, I gave a presentation to the WQCC about this initiative because I was the senior and team leader and program manager in charge of the stormwater program. So I'm kind of serving two roles here. One is now I'm serving as an executive sponsor to this project. I want you to feel free to contact me at any point about this or information management or whatever kind of questions you may have. But I also want to just point out that we recruited and successfully found Sarah as a watershed scientist, essentially, that was highly capable and available as a resource to the regions. And having her on this initiative is really, I think, a huge opportunity. So I'm just trying to help bridge the gap and provide some support and show you that State Board is 100% behind this initiative, including the collaborative part of it. And so Mona and others have offered to help, but they've been really busy. And so there's going to be more phases, and we still want to have State Water Board collaborating with regions, and the staff that are doing it now are regions 9 and 3, and they're going to run out of steam soon, I think. So there's a huge opportunity to hear some of the needs that we heard in the public comment period too, to have them reflected on this team directly if you guys want. This slide is really summarizes the issue of the last 40 years and the stormwater program in particular, dealing with that shift that Sarah was mentioning. And I just want to emphasize that what we call the final part of that triangle on the right is really watershed management. We've been trying to do watershed management at the water boards as long as I've been a staff. And in the 90s, I was part of the watershed management initiative that was actually a pretty exciting period in time at the water boards. But for many reasons, the program silos won that battle of the day. But I think we're being told by the environment, the stakeholders, and the issues that it's still time. It's really probably the best time to do this integrated, real true, combining the programs to solve actual water resource management problems. And so rather than go through the pieces of the slide again, I just really need to emphasize that this is reflected nationally. There's a really good book called The Politics of Urban Runoff that is does some case studies of Seattle and Austin. It was a 2012 book that really, I think, captures some of the discussion and thought that needs to go into how to shift from the old way of thinking about water management to the new. So we're trying to practice this. I hear your staff talking about it, and I hear your stakeholders talking about it. So this initiative is a bit of a gathering point and an opportunity to try to make some of these projects succeed. So with that, I think we are now available for questions if you have any.
Board members?
Thank you. Thank you both for your presentation. I always appreciate when people make me think differently. And I think this drought is an opportunity to have other people think differently as well. And Greg, you mentioned as your role of information transfer, what was it?
Information management and analysis.
Okay, so yeah. Information management and analysis. It struck me when you use that term that I think up to this point, and your slide reflects it, that stormwater has been considered a wasteful product. Well, if we think of water from storms as the primary source of recharging all of our systems, it's a different way of looking at what is the function of storms and how they deliver water. And I think the drought provides an opportunity to change people's opinions that I think in California, we're getting close to the point where we're going to start talking out loud about there is no such thing as wastewater. Right. But water from storms, it cannot be considered wasteful. And I think you have a golden opportunity here to change people's approach to these pulses of water that comes from storms. And I would encourage you to grasp this opportunity and get people thinking differently about water from storms and how that is important to the bigger picture in watershed management and people management.
Okay, just a thought. Yeah. It resonates.
Any other?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yeah. I really support looking at this as a resource. At the same time, I recognize, and it must be recognized, the challenge of trying to implement now in arrears, in the rearview mirror of a low-impact development model to the built environment. I think as you know, you ask an engineer, a civil engineer, to drain your site and grade it to drain and make it go, you bet they will. And that's exactly what happened. And, you know, we never really contemplated the net effect, the cumulative effect of stormwater runoff and how it affects the, whether it be like the site, Sarah, that you had with the daycare that looks like it's going to go down the stream or the other effects that are out there, the hydrologic effects. I'm interested, we have been, and I believe that our staff is going to talk today about the MS4 program, and in fact, a very good LID manual has been prepared and actually disseminated, I believe, freely by Sonoma County Water Agency to the participants and co-permittees here. But at the same time, I recognize the challenge in the built environment to look at it now. And I'm just curious in the work plan, and maybe I'm jumping too far ahead here, but how do you do that from here? How do you, because I looked at a site in LA Basin recently, and granted, I live in the North Coast. The LA Basin is a long ways from here, and how I actually deal with my environment. But it is very daunting to take a Google Earth image and look at it from 50,000 foot, and then come down and look at it from 10,000 foot, and then look at a site, because that's what we were trying to do, is look at a very intense industrial site that's located in a very dense and urban environment, and they're subject to stormwater requirements, whether it be an industrial stormwater permit or an MS4 permit collectively that discharges to an MS4. So how do you do that? How do you do it from here and realizing, I think also it's impossible to treat all this actively and capture that December 12th storm we had up here was one heck of a big event. And I mean, everything was bank full that I saw. I was out sampling that day. And it was pretty exciting to see bank full. We haven't seen that in a while. But how do you contemplate in a work plan like this then working in the built environment in some of the really dense urban environments and try to affect stormwater. I'm just curious how you do that.
Well, it's adaptive for the areas, obviously. So the LA region happens to have a very strong initiative of their own with their MS4 permit to try to encourage people through that regulatory kind of direct measure to infiltrate as often and as many places as possible. You layer on top of that things like incentives for the grants. It's not much in the Prop 1 forecast, but I think there'll be more and more opportunities for support for financing for projects, which changes how people think about this retrofit conundrum, which I think is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And so I think it has to be adaptive for the area and the issues and the opportunities that are facing that area. Groundwater recharge may be a more significant thing in certain parts of the state versus salmonid concerns on the LID, sort of the post-construction status of our built landscape. It should be driven by what the beneficial uses and what the stakeholders and the environment is really asking for, so to speak. So it can't be a one-size-fits-all. The state board just has to be, in my opinion, much more resilient with its silos, as we've seen a few times today. And we have to figure out how to actually do some of this without falling on our face when trying to do it all. You know, there's many examples in my mind, and maybe the WMI Watershed Management Initiative is that, where we try to do it all. And we just have to make some progress on some of these things.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I'll tell you, you and I ran into each other at WQCC when you presented this. And I'm always impressed when I go to WQCC and we look at the state as a whole. Because granted, I live here and I deal with the 25,000 square miles we have in Region 1. And yet when I go and rub against some of the other regional board members and some of the things they're dealing with statewide, and state board too, you know. I mean, it's daunting to look at the state of California and look at the differences and look at the regional differences and the regional intricacies that are out there. By the way, I'm very glad I'm in Region 1. But as it goes, I think you're absolutely right. You have to be, site it specific to the area, adaptively manage this thing. It's going to be quite interesting to see how that, I mean, the paradigm shift has happened. I think, you know, the sink it, slow it, save it, don't just drain it. You know, this is a resource, absolutely. And yet the MS4, you know, is a pretty hard curve as well for municipalities to stay on top of and to, you know, work on. I think stormwater is one of our biggest non-point source issues that we deal with, at least in some areas of our region here. And it's quite daunting to look at it from here and think about how we can do things as they are today and moving forward from there. So I'm very pleased to hear, you know, the adaptive management model, the specifics that you could apply to a site, that it's not the same everywhere. Absolutely.
The work plan is not written. This is a proposal to our board members that we're hoping they will support with commitment of, you know, yes, do it, and permission, so to speak, and resources. And the opportunity that I just saw when you were speaking was there could be regionalization of the work plan. And so right now we haven't even thought about that format and how to address the interests and the needs, but I appreciate your feedback.
Well, and as it goes, guys, I mean, if we can be of help over here, I mean, we have a very good staff here that works on this stuff in our region, in our backyard and front yard, and if we can be of help as a board to you, please keep us informed as that goes. Thank you for coming today. Great.
I wanted to add one thing to that. This is Mona again. So I think we have a unique opportunity in the North Coast region in that we do have many areas that will develop in the future, but we don't have the kind of wall-to-wall urbanization that some regions face. So that is one consideration that Colleen and I took into account when we have designated areas for municipal stormwater permit coverage, whether it's under the Phase 1 permit that we write as staff or whether we were working with the state board to designate areas under the Phase 2 permit for smaller municipalities. So one of the things we considered when we were doing that is where are the counties and cities planning to develop in the future? And we designated quite a few areas that are currently not highly urbanized, but they are planned to develop more in the future. So we wanted to get them under a municipal stormwater permit to make sure that when that development happens, it happens in the friendliest way to water quality as possible and to use low impact development. So I think both as we see some of the redevelopment projects moving through, as our parking lots, streets, and buildings reach their design life, we have an opportunity at that point. The municipal permits do have requirements to do retrofit for low impact development, but also as we see new development in areas, as long as we can try to work with our municipalities to plan those out and get those areas designated, we can see that development happen in a hopefully more well thought out manner than our previous development with stormwater in mind.
I think that's right, Mona, and actually I'm glad about that too. I mean, looking further, and if you look at municipal boundaries as they're contemplated in general plans and the general plan updates, you could see those municipal footprints and their jurisdictional boundaries and where they're at. I would say at the same time, looking at from a resource side, you know, we have talked about in here, whether it be Dwayne DeWitt coming to us this morning and talking about Reslin Creek that flows through an urbanized area and the potential, looking at it just from the sunny side up side of that, well, what can be done out there to, we've talked with Dave Kuzmar in here before, and he's contemplating, you know, this series of maybe nutrient trading, which we had done on a wastewater permit, but maybe taking a model of making willing buyers and sellers, in essence, out there of how do you then make it so you can do projects and fund projects. And I think that is also an opportunity here. I'd encourage you guys, by the way, to look at that if you haven't. I know that it's gotten some attention, I believe, at least wider than Region 1. Certainly that the nutrient offset program or the concept of that to, and it's not just to make it go away, it's actually creating at least some give and take, some buyers and sellers out here. It's not really an exchange of money. It's more an exchange of the ability to do things and places to do them and projects from which you can actually improve the overall water quality in an area. And I'd encourage that to be contemplated in that work plan, too, as you move forward. At least some models like that, some thought put into that, because I think that furthers a paradigm of how do we get at this? Because, again, it's very difficult for me to contemplate downtown Santa Rosa even, which isn't huge, but it is a built environment about what we do down there. And how do we make that better? So, great. Thanks, Mona, for that.
Great. Well, thank you, Sarah and Greg, for that great presentation. Can we get the, thank you. And now we're going to move on to Colleen Hunt and Andy Rogers. They're going to discuss the process they've gone through in working with our co-permittees and expanding that to include our phase two co-permittees, most of them that are in the Russian River watershed, and align them under one municipal stormwater permit.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Colleen Hunt, environmental scientist on your staff in the Municipal Stormwater Program. As Mona said, I'm co-presenting today with Mr. Andy Rogers on the watershed-wide municipal stormwater permit alignment, the challenges and success of regional collaboration and multiple agency program integration. In our municipal stormwater program, our co-permittees face a common challenge of economic hardship in being able to implement the requirements of the Municipal Stormwater Program. This presentation and this approach at the watershed alignment is an overview of the collaborative process to allow the co-permittees to maximize resources for this program, in turn providing numerous benefits to water quality. So this project, or this alignment, really focused within the Russian River watershed. It's a priority watershed in the Municipal Stormwater Program because it is the most populated watershed in the North Coast region. And the impairments we see in the Russian River watershed, stormwater runoff in urbanized areas does play a role in those impairments and affects the beneficial uses. In the watershed, this is a list of the municipalities that are regulated under the MS4 program. Listed is the populations. Noting for the counties of Sonoma County and Mendocino County, those are total populations in the county. Those include incorporated populations, so that's not a reflection of the actual boundaries, the unincorporated portions of the counties that are regulated under the MS4 program, but rather their entire populations. But what I'd like to note on this slide, if you see the city of Santa Rosa has approximately 170,000 people, It's our most urbanized area in the region. Second highest is Roanoke Park with just over 41,000. So we really have, the intention here is to show that we really have some small municipalities working at complying with the municipal stormwater program. And I'd also like to note the Sonoma County Water Agency is a co-permittee in the municipal stormwater program. Their 600,000 approximate customers they serve is also outside the MS4 boundary and is also outside our region as they service some communities in Marin County. So here is the Russian River watershed, and as you can see down towards the bottom where the city of Santa Rosa city limits are, you can see the majority of the urbanized area, even in the watershed, is within that lower portion of the watershed, which is also the Laguna de Santa Rosa watershed. In terms of regulatory mechanisms for municipalities within the watershed, we have three Phase 1 co-permittees: the City of Santa Rosa, the County of Sonoma, and the Sonoma County Water Agency. And the remaining municipalities on the list are regulated in the Phase 2 program.
Good morning, board members. My name is Andy Rogers. I'm executive director of the Russian River Watershed Association. It's great to be here. Thank you for the invite. So just a real quick note about, I'm going to say the RRWA because it's a lot easier. But the RRWA was formed in 2003, and it was a voluntary association of the members that you see listed here. And it was formed voluntarily to address clean water issues, fisheries restoration, and watershed enhancement. Basically, there's a lot of expertise and resources amongst the agencies, and get together, let's share those resources, and perhaps do more with less. That's kind of maybe the quickest way to say it. But the RRWA, all the municipalities under Phase 1 and Phase 2 MS4 permits are members of the RRWA. And we had two left to go 2 years ago, and Mendocino and the City of Sebastopol joined. They kind of completed the map, so we're excited about that. So the way we're structured is we have a board of directors, and the board of directors is our appointed elected officials from each of the member agencies, and we have five meetings a year. Those are open to the public. We encourage folks to attend, and we discuss a wide range of issues, all things water. Today we're going to be talking about a stormwater story. We have a working group, which is the a lot of the staff of the agencies and our membership, and it's really where a lot of the technical work gets done, a lot of decisions made and recommendations that then we take to the board, and we have eight meetings a year, also open to the public. Then there is a staff to kind of help convene and facilitate this process of all this expertise amongst the agencies, and that's myself and one other and another part-time person. And then really the way we're structured, we have annual work plans that are developed, and it takes about 4 months to do that. And it's a collaborative process, and we really have the compliance and the agencies as one of the central pieces to how the work plans are developed. So we do these regional projects, and they provide great benefits, but they also check a lot of boxes in the permit compliance category. So, again, I mentioned there was a story. We were formed in 2003, and so there was a collaboration, and we're formed through a memorandum of understanding. And so we have a forum that meets regularly, and it's in place, and the Phase 2 permit in 2013 was proposed, and all our members were kind of wondering how this was going to move forward, whether we were going to go individually, whether we were going to get together, whether we're going to do a combination of both. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more in a minute. But there are new permit provisions. A lot of them are very daunting and complicated, particularly for the smaller agencies, but also for the larger agencies. So individually and collectively, we went through a feasibility and cost analysis. Each of the agencies really looked hard at the numbers, at some options that they had, and we came together to compare notes. And one interesting challenge of that is that you heard from Colleen the difference in the size of some of these agencies. They're all over the place in terms of how far they'd gotten along and what kind of staff they had in place and what kind of programs and ordinances they could reference. So we really had a wide range of statuses amongst the agencies.
So with the cost analysis, the phase twos had some concern about moving forward implementing the phase two permit individually. And so they came to me and Regional Water Board staff, you know, kind of wondering what the options were. And there were essentially, there's three options in MPDES permitting and for municipal stormwater. And that's the general permit, so the phase two permit that the state board had adopted. They could request a special permit, like an individual permit, or we could develop a watershed-wide permit using the current phase one municipal stormwater permit as kind of the foundation for that approach. And Regional Water Board staff were really interested in moving forward with an approach like that. And so the phase two communities asked for some guidance on what that would look like. So through the RRWA, I began to an education process with the municipalities on information about the phase one permit and what it would look like to align the municipalities under a single watershed-wide permit. When we talk about the benefits of a watershed-wide permit, it really goes to my first point in bringing municipalities together to comply with permits in many avenues that they could work collectively on to maximize resources and to leverage existing resources. But in terms of Regional Water Board support, we saw the opportunity for water quality support in several aspects of the program. The first being the Low Impact Development Manual, which has already been mentioned today. It's an existing manual developed by the City of Santa Rosa and approved by the Regional Water Board Executive Officer for use. It's Regional Water Board staff's preferred method for implementing low impact development. And to be able to conduct that on a watershed-wide basis is not only beneficial to water quality, but it really provides consistency to the developers in the community who are subject to comply with the manual. We also look at how the municipal stormwater permit works at improving impaired water. And with the anticipation of the Russian River pathogens TMDL and the Laguna de Santa Rosa nutrient TMDL, the waste load allocations for those TMDLs in the municipal stormwater program will be implemented through the stormwater permit. And so from our perspective, it really makes sense to have all of those municipalities under one permit when we're looking at TMDL implementation. And this can lead to a watershed-wide approach to pollutant source control and monitoring. Also, something that's important in the municipal stormwater program is education to the public. And so having a one watershed-wide permit, we can have a consistent regional outreach messaging that will hopefully in turn increase awareness to the public and increase their behavioral impact in terms of reducing pollution in stormwater runoff. And also in terms of annual reports to the Regional Water Board, having all the municipalities under the same requirements, there can be more focused reporting, which provides efficient and quick turnaround time for the regulators.
And then from the member agencies side of things, really, as I kind of mentioned, the whole reason RWA was put together to leverage existing resources, and that by everybody's individual analysis seemed to really bear out in the stormwater, complying with the stormwater permit. So leveraging existing resources and the expertise resulted in a significant cost savings. And just by an example, you know, this isn't ROWA. This isn't me and my staff. These are experts in all our member agencies, many of which are here today because they're really involved in these things. Large agencies, there's folks from Mendocino County. So these are very engaged experts and professionals coming up with these. So it's pretty exciting to work on this. And the other piece of this was building on the established work. Like I mentioned, we've been around since 2003, developing this communication and this collaboration. And it was determined that we could really kind of turn around higher quality deliverables for less in less time. But all that else sounds really good. But then there's further reality, and that's the process. We had roughly, I can't remember exactly how long, but by the time we decided to move forward with this, there was about 4 to 6 months or something like that before we needed to get to a July the 1st date with a determination and a commitment from each of the agencies individually, from their city councils and supervisors, et cetera. So there was time constraints to get things on agendas, staff reports prepared. And there were issues along the way. Okay, so what if one of our member agencies is vastly out of compliance? Does that mean everybody's responsible? So there were a lot of deep conversations that went on in city attorneys' realms and staff. But all these things were worked out, and the collaboration ruled the day. Our MOU establishes the framework for collaboration that wasn't changed. It worked for that. So again, I keep saying voluntary because it's really important to mention this. This collaboration is a voluntary commitment. Formal letters of intent were submitted, and implementation plans were then set on a schedule to be submitted 6 months later. And as far as I know, this is the only watershed-wide voluntarily associated alignment of the stormwater permit in California. Pretty exciting.
So as Andy mentioned, we had this July 1st, 2013 deadline, and all of our Phase 2 municipalities except for Mendocino County were on board with moving forward with a watershed-wide permit. And since then, we've been working together in an effort to oversee those implementation plans. And those are basically the Phase 2's commitment to complying with the Phase 1 permit. This permit alignment has been successful in allowing for streamlined communication, efficiency, a collaborative effort at protecting water quality, and in the presentation I'm going to move to in a moment, it allowed for the group to work together in preparation for the Phase 1 permit, in which these municipalities will all be named as Phase 1 co-permittees in the upcoming renewal.
So the three kind of conclusions I think from this is that by doing this alignment and being involved with the ROWA, this is a cost-effective program. We've now been roughly 2 years in and can say it continues to bear out how we were hoping it would bear out. It's provided consistency, and we haven't talked at all about all the projects that we do, but we do a lot of outreach. And so consistent messaging is a powerful means, and through this permit, we have a foundation to do that. And speaking of foundation, we've got a foundation to do a lot more work at the members' direction.
Thank you, Andy and Colleen. We can pause here again to take any questions from the board if you'd like, or we can move on to the next presentation.
Question. Thank you. I just need a point of clarification. At the very end, you mentioned what I thought you said, that Mendocino County is not participating in this process. Can you help me understand the role of Mendocino County and the city of Ukiah in this, and are they involved and supportive of this process?
Yeah, so that was correct. Mendocino County is not part of the watershed-wide permit alignment. Mendocino County is a unique situation because they are the only municipality in the RRWA that has regulated MS4 permit boundaries outside of the Russian River watershed. And so they have portions of Mendocino County that are covered under the MS4 permit are unincorporated portions of Ukiah and unincorporated portions of Fort Bragg. And so the county, although they are RRWA members and do participate in the projects that the RRWA works on in terms of public outreach and the messaging, decided to implement the phase two permit along with the city of Fort Bragg, who they share a boundary with over on the coast. And so that was their preference in moving forward. And because at this point, this was a voluntary effort in terms of the watershed alignment, we agreed that them moving forward with the phase two permit was appropriate.
Just to add to that, Mendocino County is a paying member of the RRWA, and they pay up according to the same formula that all the other ones do, which is based primarily on population and percent of the area that's in the watershed, the Russian River watershed. The city of Ukiah is actually our administering agency, and I would consider them one of the leaders in the RRWA. So we're very involved with them, and Mendocino just approved to go into the next year as active members.
So since half of the watershed of the Russian River is in Mendocino County, I need to be clear on your statement that this is a watershed-wide supported program. I'm confused. I'm not convinced that it is a watershed-wide program and not everybody's marching to the same tune.
Well, the city of Ukiah is going to be a co-permittee under the Phase 1 permit. So while portions of Mendocino County are going to retain their Phase 2 coverage, city of Ukiah is going to join the Sonoma County entities in the watershed permit, as well as both Ukiah and Mendocino County join in many of the watershed activities, even if Mendocino County is not going to be named as a formal member, but continue with their phase two.
But if we go back three slides, Mona, and says it's the only one in California, is that a truthful statement? Or is it a watershed-wide alignment?
In terms of collaborating and doing projects, absolutely. So Mendocino is, we do a lot of projects involving Mendocino and benefit Mendocino, and they pay for those benefits. So, yes.
One thing I wanted to add is in the past we have considered, this might be shocking to some people, so we have considered designating the entire Russian River watershed as a municipality to better help us implement TMDLs and do that kind of thing. But working with the municipalities, we decided that we would designate only limited areas for the actual full MS4 permit coverage. But then the counties are working on some of the projects that are very similar to the phase one permit projects voluntarily throughout the rest of the county. So we decided not to designate the entire area of the Russian River watershed, although frankly, I did consider it to better help us implement TMDLs.
Thank you.
I just had one, and then I think Board Member Giusti's raised an issue. Be very careful on how you describe it.
So thank you, Colleen and Andy. We are now going to move on to Colleen is going to give us a additional details on her work developing a draft municipal phase one stormwater permit for your future consideration.
And I'm sorry, I did have one editorial comment. Great job on bringing as many people as you did to the table in a single watershed and being able to have everyone implement portions of the program. So,
thank you.
A great achievement.
So, Colleen Hunt. So, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to move into the municipal stormwater phase one permit renewal update. So on October 1st, 2009, this board adopted the 2009-0050 waste discharge requirements and PDES permit for the City of Santa Rosa, the County of Sonoma, and the Sonoma County Water Agency. Stormwater and non-stormwater discharges from municipal separate storm sewer systems. That permit went into effect January 1st, 2010. And expired December 31st, 2014. I have been working on drafting a renewal permit for your consideration for adoption. And as I said, this presentation is an overview on the status of that effort. The presentation will consist of some new permit requirements, focusing probably on the more significant permit changes, including a more detailed look at monitoring. That will be the most significant area of the permit to change and our anticipated schedule. So as we just discussed in the previous presentation, one of the most significant changes will be adding phase two permittees to the new permit as phase one permittees. So in our existing structure, we have three phase one permittees, eight phase two permittees, and two non-traditional. This is Caltrans and Sonoma State University. And in the proposed new structure, we will have 10 phase one co-permittees, one phase two, Mendocino County, and then those two non-traditionals. I already touched on this in the previous presentation, but the other significant change with aligning those municipalities within the watershed is having a watershed-wide approach. And these are certain projects that have already been worked on with this approach, and that includes our non-stormwater best management practices plan, the low-impact development manual, monitoring. We've worked as a committee for the last year to look at the needs of monitoring in the MS4 program. And as Andy indicated, the public education and outreach component of the permit. So a few highlighted changes in proposed in the permit renewal will be a general stormwater messaging to really include education to the public on stormwater and how it moves through a watershed and is not treated and ends up in our creeks and rivers. Car washing and appropriate best management practices for residents to use when washing their cars. Focus on contaminants of emerging concern, and also requiring all municipalities to have a website. Most municipalities do have a website that provides education and outreach. In some cases, it's underutilized, and we would like to see that better utilized. In our industrial and commercial program, we're going to be looking to provide best management practice support to industries that conduct power washing and that manage portable sanitary service units. And most of these requirements came out of the Russian River Watershed Association's public survey that they conduct once a year to look and see how knowledgeable the public is on stormwater. And it highlighted that car washing was a significant concern. In our municipal operations, we'll be looking at putting together, each municipality putting together a facilities inventory and facility pollution prevention plans on how BMPs are implemented and maintained at facilities that have a potential for pollution and stormwater runoff. And in our illicit discharge, illicit connection section of the permit, we're going to be focusing on outfall mapping and outfall inspections for non-stormwater discharges. In the construction program, we're adding higher accountability with inspections. This was identified as a need after I completed two audits of the City of Santa Rosa and the County of Sonoma's construction management programs. And in the post-construction element of the permit, we're going to be focusing on implementation of a hydro modification management plan and the consolidation of triggers for LID projects. And I'm going to pass the microphone over to Mona. She's going to provide a overview of a few challenges that were presented with the previous permit and the solutions for that, for those challenges.
Mona, before you begin, I just want to announce to board members that you need to get your lunch orders prepared, because Patty needs to gather them up probably in the next 5 minutes if you want to have a timely lunch. And so that's just a reminder. With that, thank you. Mona.
Yes, that's very important. So hello again. I'm Mona Doherty with your staff. So one of our top priorities is to ensure that our development and redevelopment projects include low-impact development. In our phase one area, our municipal stormwater permit requires water quality treatment of the design storm and requires volume capture of the delta between pre-development and post-development runoff with the use of high-priority LID features. One of the biggest challenges we have with this is our soils. We have soils that vary from good infiltration to very poor infiltration, types A through D, with a good portion of the area having C and D soils. As you may recall, you received many comments during the 2009 Municipal Phase 1 permit adoption on LID in soils with a low infiltration rate. Many commenters were concerned that the requirements in the permit were not feasible and project applicants would be left in an untenable situation and not able to comply with the permit requirements. And I want to update you on how this issue was resolved. So this is the LID manual that we've discussed several times today. It was developed by the co-permittees of City of Santa Rosa, Sonoma County, and the Water Agency, along with they consulted private engineers, materials experts, landscape architects, and your staff to develop this manual in addressing designs for all types of soils. Some designs included volume capture below a raised subdrain that can then function as a flow-through system for water quality treatment in frequent storms. These LID features capture the increased volume of runoff from a site after development, maintaining natural hydrology, protecting surface water from scour and erosion, and recharging groundwater from municipal supply, as well as providing base flows to surface waters in the dry season. So here I'm going to walk you through a typical bioretention unit. So if you do not have good infiltrative soils, generally to make sure that you don't have issues with drainage, you would provide an underdrain at the bottom of the unit. So this can work for water quality treatment, but doesn't provide for good infiltration and volume capture of the difference of the storms between pre-development and post-development unless you do have good infiltration. So in poor soils, much of the captured runoff does run through the underdrain and out. So we wanted to see if we could address that within the manual. So here you see a schematic from the manual. The top schematic is without an underdrain or a subdrain, and it is with for good soils. And below you see a raised underdrain. So the technical team came up with an idea to raise the underdrain to have it be a subdrain instead. Right there. And this allows for a volume capture area beneath the subdrain. So it can function even in poor
in soils with poor infiltration, because the volume capture area, when it's filled with stormwater, can infiltrate over time while still functioning as a flow-through system when storms come before the infiltration area is drained. And then that infiltration area can fill up again. And so that area is sized to comply with the permit, and we have been seeing these go in throughout the permit boundary. So far they've been very successful. We're seeing them go in a lot of projects. And that, to us, has been a great success, and it really is due to the innovation of the different permittees and their work with some of the private engineers and other groups that have helped in developing this. So with that, I'm going to turn it back to Colleen for the rest of the presentation.
Thank you, Mona. So the remainder of my presentation really focuses on monitoring, and the City of Santa Rosa conducted a lot of monitoring during the current permit term, and so we spent quite a bit of time assessing this data. What can we learn from it? Where are the gaps? What information is needed in the new permit based on the data, and where can we consolidate requirements? The data that was collected was mostly within the city limits of Santa Rosa. The types of data collected or types of studies conducted included outfall sampling during both wet and dry weather. And this looks at how stormwater runoff varies in different land use drainage areas. So comparing residential drainage versus downtown, for example. The co-permittees conducted receiving water monitoring, chronic toxicity testing, bioassessment study, and a temperature study. So on this slide, the pollutants listed on the left were shown to increase with wet weather or be at higher levels in wet weather runoff. So looking at copper, zinc, and lead, pathogens, and sediment of being a concern when it rains. And so in response to that, the new permit will propose to require the co-permittees to investigate the sources of these pollutants and implement additional BMPs to address the increase during wet weather runoff. With the copper, lead, and zinc, we will be increasing the monitoring frequency. With the pathogens, this effort will also support the Russian River pathogen, TMDL. And we're going to focus the analysis similar to that as Regional Water Board staff recommendation from the TMDL monitoring. And also with sediment, this effort will also be in support of the Laguna de Santa Rosa nutrient TMDL. Along also with the nutrient TMDL, the pollutants listed on the left we found not to be increasing with wet weather or found above water quality standards. So we're going to continue focusing in the new permit on the pollutants or the parameters listed on the right: total phosphorus, total nitrogen, ammonia, pH, temperature, and flow. And this will help with TMDL verification of waste load in stormwater, and it will also help us be able to look at water quality standards. The co-permittees conducted a temperature study in the summer months, and we learned that temperature is influenced by many factors in the Laguna. And so while it's an important component of the stormwater program, we've decided not to repeat the temperature study, but to focus our resources elsewhere. But we will continue to look at temperature as a routine parameter when sampling is conducted. And we also had sampled, we have some more limited sampling on dissolved oxygen, but we found kind of what we would expect within the city limits of Santa Rosa anyway, that dissolved oxygen levels are lower in receiving water during the summer, and high in the discharge of stormwater runoff. So we're going to continue to observe dissolved oxygen levels in routine sampling. The chronic toxicity testing that was conducted by the City of Santa Rosa consisted of 4 sampling locations twice a year during rain events and in receiving water. There was one location reported to show statistically significant toxicity. The City of Santa Rosa is currently studying that area more closely to confirm the presence or absence of toxicity. Based on those results, we will decide what we need to include in the new permit. But we have decided that we're going to look at studying toxicity in new locations. So as I said, there's 4 locations. The 3 that did not show toxicity during the permit term, we're going to move those to different study areas. We're looking at developing a method to assess toxicity data in stormwater. Right now, we conduct the toxicity testing in receiving water. And so when we do have a report of toxicity, the question still remains what influence, what contribution does stormwater have on that result? And so putting into the permit some requirements to try and answer that question. And then we're going to also incorporate some standard language into the permit related to chronic toxicity testing. This includes sensitivity screening, which allows the co-permittees to study the most sensitive species and only use that one species for the remainder of the permit term in their study. This will hopefully result in a cost savings. And we're also going to look at having plans in place for when toxicity is identified, what are the next steps that we look at with that toxicity? How do we identify where it came from and what is actually causing the toxicity? And the City of Santa Rosa also conducted a bioassessment study. This is a ranking system of creek reaches based on their biological and physical habitat. The city conducted their study in the summer of 2012 at 5 creek reaches within the city limits. These are the results of that study. With a Upper Santa Rosa Creek receiving a fair ranking, Lower Santa Rosa Creek and Steel Creek receiving a poor ranking, and Brush Creek and Colgan Creek receiving a very poor ranking. And with the bioassessment, those rankings, it's like that's the first part, and now we have to kind of answer some questions about why we saw low rankings, the poor and very poor. And so in the new permit, we're going to be looking at answering these questions I have on the slide about why do we have these low rankings? And the more important element is to really look at how is stormwater contributing to these rankings. Other considerations for our monitoring, we are going to expand the monitoring requirements to encompass the entire Laguna de Santa Rosa. We are very supportive of a regional monitoring approach in that the co-permittees within that laguna really hoping that they will work together to comply with the monitoring requirements. We are hoping to have or proposing to have more stringent reporting requirements. And at some point during the 5-year permit term, the phase 2 municipalities will have to characterize their discharge. And so with that, I just wanted to point out that this whole process, I think from the presentation Andy and I discussed with educating and bringing in co-permittees to work together all the way to the monitoring, and I worked very closely with the co-permittees on sharing my data assessment and soliciting their input for how we should manage the gaps and the questions really embraces our region's visioning statement of healthy watersheds, effective regulations, and strong partnerships. The anticipated schedule, the permit should go to public comment by April 20th for a 45-day public comment period. And we are planning to bring this permit to you for consideration of adoption at the August 13th board meeting. May I answer any questions?
Any board member questions? I just had one comment. I hope on the drainage areas and making sure that it can get through impermeable layers is obviously exceedingly important in the regs. I do want to say I hope there's exceptions for wildlife, and I can think of two things. McKinneyville Community Services District a nonprofit has a huge frog pond, and it's been there hundreds of years. It's dependent on about 5 feet down impermeable layer of clay, and when it first rains, nothing happens, but about November, it gets water to June, and the county now uses it to drain water into it, and the district as well. So it's actually dependent on that water not permeating. And then there's another one of a coho raising pond that also is dealing with this impermeable clay area. And so then that creates a pond that's right by a creek. And so I just hope there's flexibility for wildlife preserves in there because they can take place in an urban setting. And the very problem you're attempting to solve, i.e. getting through an impermeable layer of soil, is great. You got to do that. That's the big picture. That's the 100,000 foot picture. But every once in a while, there's wildlife preserves that are really based upon holding that water there.
Definitely. The Regional Water Board staff is very sensitive to the use of wetlands and similar types of bodies like that to wildlife. And this program doesn't in any way intend to impact wetlands or other waters of the state or any type of water bodies that are being used for wildlife beneficial uses.
I could have guessed that, but it's very reassuring to hear. Thank you.
Yes. So I want to thank Colleen for sharing some of the new requirements that we're going to propose to you for future consideration. And at this time, that's the end of the presentations, and I'd like to ask if you have any further questions, and we really appreciate the opportunity to discuss this with you. And I also personally hope you share our enthusiasm for these projects. And anyway, we'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
This is the third term of the MS4, correct? We're going into the fourth, right?
Yes, I believe it's the fourth term, yes.
Yeah. By way of disclosure, I've done some sampling for the permittees, co-permittees on this permit over time, and I've crossed that bridge as far as a conflict before. So. Just to be clear, we're not in a period of permit right now, but I'll clear that again. A couple things, a question. The sampling, as it goes, am I right to say that the monitoring reporting program here, will it be in the permit, or is it to be to the co-permittees and the Rush River Watershed Association then to propose if it is a regional permit, or a regional sampling plan, which I believe would be appropriate here, would it be up to them then to put forth a proposed plan for review and approval?
Yeah, so our current proposal in the monitoring reporting program, the permit would include a monitoring reporting program that would lay out requirements kind of in a generic fashion. So, for example, to conduct outfall monitoring in wet weather and dry weather, to look at these pollutants, but allow the co-permittees to develop the outfalls they would like to study and to allow them to expand out into the entire laguna would be the requirement and to look at those outfalls within the whole watershed. And so the whole monitoring reporting program is drafted with that type of element where there's a requirement, but the actual location and how that's going to be implemented will be up to the co-permittees. With that, there will be there's a proposed requirement for the co-permittees to develop a work plan in how they're going to basically implement the monitoring and reporting program.
Thank you for that, by the way. And I'd note that the sampling, the analyte, the analytes, the things that are analyzed here, a couple things on that is that we've talked about this and some of the scoping of this, is that I think that the sampling and the analyte list should be tailored to some of the TMDL impairments, which, and refine that, right? And further to take it towards a flow weighted analysis, so we could look at a loading factor. Because in essence, if we're going to get it, and I believe it, and I said this before, that I believe the MS4 permit here specific to this region is going to be a big component of TMDL work and compliance and check and verify within the Laguna and the Russian River system. As that goes, I still believe that, you know, being able to quantify loading and contribution and effectiveness monitoring of that, the work that's being done on the land and within these water bodies and water courses to check and verify that. I think that offers opportunity then to link this with some of the non-point source work and some of the TMDL compliance work.
Yes, indeed. One thing I would note is the previous permit that is actually the existing permit. So the previous permit you all adopted was really, the monitoring was really intended to address the TMDL impairments and the data needs to look at TMDLs. As our TMDL staff have moved forward and learned more about what data is needed, and also Colleen did such a comprehensive data analysis, we are then proposing to slightly alter the monitoring based on more knowledge on the TMDL as well as the data analysis, what was found during this monitoring period.
I think that's appropriate too, Mona. And I go one step further. When it comes to bacteria here, we have a bacterial component in the lower Russian, which is, and actually the Laguna's bacterial impaired as well with the indicator pathogens. Some of those numbers go sky high on high flow events, and I would ask a consideration that there's a quantification at least at times of the total MPN numbers for different types of bacteria here. There's been a limitation because, in essence, you have to dilute those samples out to quantify. It's interesting to get a result back that said it's greater than 2,400 MPN, most probable number of bacteria per 100 mils, but you don't know if it's 2.4 million is the real number, if it's 2,401. So I think it'd be really interesting because we're looking at a bacterially impaired water body within the lower Russian system specifically and the Laguna to have some quantification done with specifics to bacteria. I think that'd be super helpful. Last thing is, I think that the bioassessment, by the way, Colleen, I think is really good. And I think from the standpoint of having a qualitative assessment of these watersheds and these water courses, I'm aware of the work on the Colgan Channel that Santa Rosa's done, right? That was really good, by the way, Gold Star, you guys, as far as that work goes. I think those type of opportunities, we heard from Duane again this morning about maybe the Roseland Creek could be a palette to paint something on. And I think taking these boundaries, and because you're now joining phase twos into a giant phase one, that allows a broader range of possibilities here of opportunities out there within these watersheds to actually do meaningful projects. And I think that fits well within the total model collaboration within what we're trying to do TMDL-wise. Very last thing, I want to, again, call out Russian River Watershed Association. Andy, the work that your group does, Virginia Porter before you and now you, really great work, strong support from our board in the work that you do, the collaborative work, and I couldn't thank you enough for that.
Well, I'll let Colleen and Andy respond if they want to some of the other items, but one thing I did want to point out, Mr. Noren, is that we, in this permit term, are going to be designated some of the communities in the lower Russian River for MS4 permit coverage, especially to address that some of the pathogen inputs to the TMDL appear to be coming from wet weather flow from those urbanized communities. So we'll have new areas of the Russian River that will be following the MS4 permit.
Yeah, and again, Mona, I just see that from an alignment standpoint mainly, that we're aligning TMDL with some of our stormwater and some of our other, we're already doing that with some of our other programs. This is a big part of the, at least the potential equation of TMDL. It's the stormwater runoff component that really, I think, offers both opportunities and it could elucidate where some of the problems are out here.
Are there any other comments from the panel? Any other questions from the board?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thanks.
I'm going to ask, are there any public comments, cards. It's a workshop. We don't have to do that, but I always like to provide that opportunity. Okay. That will take us to, believe it or not, we finally will have arrived at approval of the minutes.